So what I'd like to do today is talk about basically three different areas. The first one would be, how do you go about choosing a company to work for if you haven't done that already? And how do you go about choosing a function in your company of choice? And lastly, the world according to myself as far as new careers and plant improvement, and how new careers are becoming available as plant improvement continues to evolve. So to start out with, career choices. Some of you may have already started in your first career, and many more of you may simply be looking. But as you probably well know, there are many careers in the realm of plant sciences. There are many different sizes and types of companies to work for. Each company has their own philosophy and their own nuances and their own ways of looking at things. Choosing a company I'd like to post up is to work for is similar to deciding which college or university you want to attend. As you know, schools range from small private colleges with limited classes but greater personal attention to very large universities with many majors, many classes, many research project opportunities, and maybe just a bit less personal attention. In the same way, companies also range from very small regional companies with relatively fewer resources and diversity of jobs to extremely large global companies and corporations with significant resources and many, many types of different jobs. For example, if you were a plant breeder, I'm a plant breeder by trade, so I'm going to be using plant breeder as examples quite often. For example, if you're a plant breeder looking for a new career, a new job, your choices could range from being the only plant breeder for a very small organic company, for example, or you could be one of over 200 plant breeders for a very large corporate private seed company where molecular marker breeding is standard operating procedure, and everything in between. So there's a variety of different companies out there that offer a variety of different jobs and careers. So just like choosing a school, only you can decide which size and type of company is the right fit for you. I encourage everybody in this room to take time to critically look at what each company has to offer, see which one's core values and vision and mission best align with yours. Because ultimately, you're going to be wanting to look for job satisfaction and a good fit. Because I can attest to the fact, being in the private industry for quite some time, you're going to spend a lot of time at work. And hopefully you find a career in a company that you're passionate about working for. You want to be at work because you're going to be spending a good portion of your life there. So take your time, think about where you want to work and what you want to do, and choose wisely. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about, once you decided what company you may want to work with, how do you choose what part of that company you want to work for? What function do you want to work for? The example I'm going to use is the only company I know very well, and that's Dowager Sciences, and we're what I would call a mid-sized global seed company. Our mission is to consistently improve what is essential to human progress by mastering science and technology. This is just an example of what a mid-sized global company looks like. Of course, there's sales across different geographies. Once you decide to work for companies such as this, you can decide, do I want to work in North America? Do I want to work in Latin America? How about Europe? How about Asia? And many other places. And you also, most ag chem companies are divided in two main sections, the ag chemicals, and the part I'm going to be talking about today is plant genetics and biotechnology. So let's say that you want to work for a global company and you want to be in plant genetics. Well, now you have more choices. You have the choice of all sorts of different crops you could be working in. So again, a variety of different things to be thinking about. Deciding which function you wish to work in once you choose a company is kind of like choosing your major at a university or college you're attending. So what are some of the types of different functions at a mid-sized global company? Well, there's multiple internal functions that cooperate and collaborate in discovery, development, and continued support for product development. There's many careers in discovery. There's a lot of careers in field scientists, plant breeders, soil scientists, agronomies, and so on. And there's also a lot of jobs in regulatory labs. Once we come up with a new trait to hit the market, we have to have the regulatory labs to shepherd it through that process. And in seeds and traits, there's all sorts of jobs surrounding developing new traits, and once these new traits are developed and invented, we have to integrate those new traits into elite germplasm. And then there's a whole realm of marker development and marker application. markers have become very, very important in plant breeding and plant improvement to enable plant breeders and plant improvement people to do their job better and more efficiently. And of course, jobs in plant breeding and production R&D. And the other thing I'd like to stress to you is no matter which function that you would tend to work in a company, there is an enormous amount of collaboration and cooperation between those functions. So it's very important that, that you understand all these different functions and can relate to the other functions. You don't have to know everything about them, but you have to know enough about them to be able to talk to the people in those other functions. I'm certainly not going to read this, and this is not a commercial for Dow AgroScience. Simply, this is just an example of the types of different products in the product pipeline for a company such as Dow AgroSciences and all the different careers that would be available. In ag-chem, you have your typical herbicide, insecticide, and fungicide areas. In corn, for instance, there's a lot of work being done in corn. There's work in insect resistance, herbicide resistance, stress management. The buzzword now, as you can tell by a lot of the talks, is on drought and stress management. The area of all biofuels is in this area. So there's an enormous amount of different types of careers at every company. You can look at animal nutrition, you can look at high energy feedstuffs, low phytate, and so on. Cotton is another crop, for example. Insect resistance there is very important. And fiber quality. Fiber quality is very complex and very interesting thing to be working on from a plant improvement standpoint. You have the realm of healthier oils and also platforms such as animal health. So, once again, many, many different types of careers within the same company, many of them overlapping and many of them working together. So now I'd like to take a little bit of time and talk about what I think are some new careers that are coming as plant improvement continues to evolve. To understand where we're going in plant improvement, sometimes it's useful to look at where we've been. If you look way back, about 5,000 BC, plant breeding was really fairly simple. You would just save the best for the next generation and replant it, and then save the best for the next generation, and so on and so on. Then about in the 1900s, quantitative genetics came online. And quantitative genetics came and put some real structure and some real science behind the quote-unquote art of plant breeding. And then after quantitative genetics, things like QTL mapping came, genomics and metabolic networks are coming online. So again, ever-changing. So what's the future of plant improvement? Well, it will continue to rely on the building blocks of classical quantitative genetics and statistics. Sometimes it's easy to get caught up in all the new things that are coming, and it's good sometimes to step back and recognize the importance of some of the basic building blocks that will continue to be very important as we go forward, such as quantitative genetics and statistics. There's a talk going on, I think right now in a couple rooms down, that talks about what is the role of statistics in genomics. And I can tell you that role is very large and very important. So we can't get caught up in all the new tools and forget about those old tools that has got us as far as we have already. The really neat thing now, and I think the very interesting thing from a plant scientist viewpoint, is we're able to ask some really new type of questions. We're able to ask questions such as, how can those new, cheaper, abundant molecular markers be used in plant improvement? How can the field of genomics be integrated in plant breeding? For a traditional plant breeder such as myself, these are very exciting and very intriguing questions to ask, and the answers are also very exciting and very interesting. I'd like to digress just a little bit and talk about Moore's Law. I don't know how many people are familiar with Moore's Law, but Moore's Law simply states that computer power doubles every 18 months. And Richard Dawkins, in a paper called Son of Moore's Law, compares advances in molecular genetics to the digital world of computers. And he says in Son of Moore's Law that essentially the time it takes to cut the cost of a DNA data point in half is 27 months. Now let's think about that. First of all, let's talk about just Moore's Law itself, that computer power doubles every 18 months. I want you to think 10 years ago at the computer you had. It was probably a big clumsy desktop, and think about how much memory it had and how fast it was, and compare that to what you have right now. It's only been 10 years, but just think how much that technology has changed. Think of the Palm Pilots. Think of everything that's happened the last 10 years. I can remember my second computer at home when we quote-unquote upgraded to 512 megs of memory. I mean, we thought that was hot stuff then. Now it's nothing. Now it's just a rounding point. So that's how fast computer power has changed. And what Richard Dawkins is proposing in Son of Moore's Law, he is saying that we are where computers were 10 years ago right now in molecular genetics. So 10 years from now, we're going to be seeing the type of radical changes that the computer industry has seen the last 10 years. Now you couple that with another article I read recently by Dr. Scott Collins in Genetic Engineering News. He talked about nanopore sequencing. And he says that theoretically, we can sequence at the speed of 1 million base pairs per second in the not too distant future. And to put this in perspective, what this means is that the whole human genome could be sequenced in less than 1 hour. And eventually, all necessary equipment could fit onto a 1x1 millimeter, millimeter disposable chip, which may only cost a few $100s. And only a connection to a computer would be required to read the entire genome. Now, is Dr. Collins right? I don't know. But even if he's partially right, this is pretty amazing and fantastic stuff. Just think about what's to come in our industry in the next 10 years. There's also all sorts of other many, many examples of technological improvements. Take plant transformation, for instance. In the old model, when you wanted to put your newly discovered gene into a plant, you had random integration. You never knew where that gene was going to land in the genome. You didn't know how many copies were going to land and what was going to happen. It was just kind of a quote-unquote crapshoot. But now, through technological improvements and new technologies, we're able to target specifically where in the genome we want that new gene to be inserted. And of course, we wanted to insert it in a place where it's conducive for that new gene to be very, very efficient. So that's just another example how things are changing and changing very, very quickly. So new technology and knowledge is allowing the merger or linking of sciences that previously did not interact, and if they did, it wasn't very efficiently. One area, of course, is the quantitative genetics that I talked about before, still very, very important, physiology, and now the new area, genomics. And at some point, those three things start to interact in what some people call this area of overlap called integrative genetics. So things are coming together. And again, I think it's important, just like with statistics, and that we step back and not lose the forest for the trees. As a plant breeder, for instance, it all still comes back down to that basic breeding cycle. What is plant breeding about at its core? Well, it's looking for sources of genetic variation. It's recombining those sources. It's selecting the best ones from there and hopefully spinning out superior commercial varieties and then running the cycle over again. So what do the new shiny tools of genomics and molecular genetics do for us? They don't change the cycle. They simply make it better and more efficient. We're now able to create sources of genetic variation where we couldn't before, or we're able to move them in from different species where we couldn't before. We're able to recombine them in novel ways. We're able to select them in novel ways. So what molecular genetics and genomics are doing is really taking this breeding cycle to a new level, but it still is the breeding cycle. Breeders will continue to ask the same sort of questions they've asked over the last decade or so. These are the things breeders ponder. What is the best breeding population? How many should you look at to find the best ones? How do you know which ones are really the best ones? And how many should be saved? These questions will continue to need to be asked by breeders and answered by breeders. And one way to answer those is the status quo and keep doing it the same way it's always been done. Or we can look to the new tools we have available to us, such as genomics and molecular genetics, and look for alternate answers, which will probably lead to better results. So what's a futuristic look for plant improvement? Well, one way to look at it is we will probably, for not much longer, be field plant breeders out in the field and lab scientists in the lab, but rather to collectively we'll be plant designers. So what would a multi-generation plan look like? The vision to get there would be to understand and control gene location, function, interaction, and products at will in plant species. That's the goal. That's the vision. That's like NASA right now deciding we want to put a man on Mars. It's a lofty goal, and it's going to take a lot of steps to get there. So if this is our goal, if this is our vision, what are the steps we need to take to get there? The first step would be to apply and enhance current OMIC's capabilities to accelerate accomplishment of short-term product goals, a really fairly reachable goal in the not too distant future. A stretch goal a little bit further down the road would be to build multigenic traits in plants and to identify and deliver on new complex product concepts. As we think further down the road and things get more complex and more hard, a bit of a leap would be to manufacture plants with complex desired characteristics to transfer and combine traits, introduce new alleles to differentiate performance. And the SOAR, the ultimate goal, the ultimate vision, is to create plants with complex performance characteristics by design. Now that's kind of a harmless little one sentence there, but if you look at that sentence and you think about everything that's involved in there, and you begin to think of all the careers and all the work that needs to be done in there, there's some really exciting things going on in plant sciences. So for those of you who are looking to choose a career in this field, you young people will be the ones that help decide what the future plant improvement will look like. You'll be the ones to take these new tools that we have available to us now and actually do something with them. As I start to summarize, I'd like to bring this quote up before you. The time will come when diligent research over long periods will bring to light things now hidden. Our universe is a sorry little affair unless it has in it something for every age to investigate. Nature does not reveal her mysteries once and for all. I don't know if anybody recognizes that quote, but it's from Seneca, Natural Questions, Book 7 of the first century. So we are not the first age to ask questions and look for things yet to be undiscovered. So your age, as you think about plant improvement and you stay in this field of plant improvement, your age most certainly has a lot to investigate and a lot to learn and a lot to apply. I think plant improvement is a very exciting and intellectually challenging field undergoing rapid change. And from a private industry standpoint, I can certainly promise you that private industry is looking for smart young people able to work in a collaborative environment to help meet the challenges of finding innovative ways to improve plants in a very competitive landscape. So in summary, I really have to say that I think plant science is a very exciting field, a lot of promise, a lot of really, really neat things going on, and I really hope that you consider staying in the field of plant sciences. I think it's a great field to be in. That's all I have. Thanks.